Chapter 17, How to Provide Support the Right Way. When I was researching this book, there were so many of you that asked questions about how exactly do you balance supporting someone without rescuing them? And so I wanted to share a very specific suggestion that almost every single expert that I spoke with raised with me. When you're supporting an adult who's struggling, one of the biggest levers that you have to pull is what you will spend money for and what you will not. If you're giving financial support to someone in an attempt to help them through a hard time, you must be very clear about the conditions upon which you are giving that support. If you give money without conditions, it will lead to massive resentment on your end. The money is not a gift, and unconditional love does not mean unconditional financial support. Oftentimes, unconditional love means withdrawing financial support. This is very hard to do, especially for parents of adult children who are struggling. And it's often the very last lever that you're going to pull. See, there's this term in recovery called rock bottom. And when we talk about rock bottom moments, it's almost always related to the person who's struggling. But what we don't talk about enough is that you, as the loved one, you're going to have a rock bottom moment too. It's going to hit when you've tried everything. Nothing's working. And now you're suffering. And then it hits you. Wait, there's one thing I haven't tried. I haven't stopped subsidizing their life. At some point, you're going to realize that by paying someone's rent or their bills or their tuition or giving them a car to drive or giving them a place to live without any conditions, you're enabling their self-destructive behavior. Remember what Dr. Waldinger said? Don't shield them from the consequences of what they choose. And at some point, you're going to reach your rock bottom and you're going to decide it's time to stop subsidizing someone's life who refuses to do the work or get the professional help that they need to get better. Now, Dr. Waldinger and every expert I spoke with was adamant about this point. You owe people love, acceptance, and compassion. You do not owe them money. Because if you're funding any aspect of someone's life while they continue to refuse treatment, or they won't get a job, or they won't attend classes, or they continue to lie or steal or be engaged in shady, avoidant behavior, you are part of the problem. Because money without conditions is enabling. But providing money with specific conditions is support. And it can look like this. You can live here if you're sober. I'll pay for your therapy as long as you and your therapist agree in writing to a monthly check-in with me. I'll pay for tuition as long as you get a 3.0. I'll pay for your rent or your phone bill or your car payments, but only if you go to the inpatient treatment program for your eating disorder. Now, as you're listening, you're probably thinking, I should probably do that. And thinking it's a good idea and saying it to somebody, that's the easy part. But the hard part is what happens when they don't agree to the conditions. Because if they refuse to go to that inpatient program or they refuse to get a job, they're calling your bluff. And you're going to have to take away all financial support, which means you stop paying the rent or you kick them out of the house. And I mean all financial support. They're not on your phone bill. You're not paying their rent. You're not giving them logins for your streaming accounts. You're not buying their groceries or paying for their Ubers. And yes, you may have even provided a guarantee on the lease for their apartment. And you're going to have to be willing to have that hit your credit. They're going to hate you. They will likely spiral in the beginning. But when they refuse to honor the conditions upon which your support was given, you must be the adult. And one of the things I just want to talk about directly is parents supporting adult children. Because as I was researching this book, I was startled by the number of parents who were asking questions about adult children who are struggling and who won't go to therapy or who won't go to inpatient programs or who won't use their tools, and they're supporting them financially. Let them struggle. Let them violate the terms of your support. And then let me Let me cut them off financially. Very few people are willing to do this because it feels cruel. And that's why throwing money at a situation is so common. But removing your financial support is the only thing that will work according to the experts, because it's the only thing you have left when nothing else has worked. You have the power. And maybe this is the exact wake-up call that your loved one needs. And if you're listening to this and you're in a place in your life right now where your parents are paying for your therapy or your rent or your education or your phone bill or any aspect of your life, I have something I need to say to you, and you need to hear this. When your parents pay for parts of your life, they get to vote on how you're living your life. When someone else is funding your life, don't have an attitude when they have an opinion about how you're using their money, because having your parents pay for your therapy and then refusing to let them talk to your therapist, that doesn't mean you're an adult. That's actually a form of gaslighting. So if you're sick and tired of your parents' opinions about what they think you should or shouldn't be doing, then start paying your own bills. Because as long as you're financially tied to them, you can say, let them, all you want. But their money is buying access to your life, whether you like it or not. The fact that they're paying for things is what's creating this dynamic. And it's your responsibility to change it if you don't like it. So if you want real independence, then prove it. And be financially independent, for real. And a funny thing happens when you can pay your own bills. You don't really care what your parents say. You'll say, let them. And then you'll say, let me, because you're proud of yourself, because you don't need their money. Because that's the thing that nobody says to you. The real reason why your parents' opinions frustrate you so much is because you need their money and you know it. And look, I get it. It's expensive in today's world. It's hard when you're younger to get yourself started. It's amazing that you're in a position where your parents will support you. But I want you to wake up and really see the situation and why you're so frustrated with them with clear eyes. The truth is, you're not mad at your parents. You're mad at yourself because you're not financially independent and you know it. I have a story to tell you about this, about why it's so important to let people struggle financially and to stop bailing people out without any condition. You know, I mentioned earlier when I was in my 40s and Chris and I were really struggling, especially with money. And there was this one moment where things were really bad. His business was missing payroll. They were shutting down locations. Chris hadn't been paid in months. I had just lost my job. We were having trouble paying for things like groceries or even filling up the gas tank. I mean, it was a really scary time. And Chris and his business partner were just desperately trying to raise money to try to keep this business afloat. And I remember him at one moment asking one of his brothers to loan him some money for the business. His brother said no and added, I'm sorry if me not giving this money is the reason why your business fails and you go bankrupt, but I won't bail you out. You've got to figure out how to do this yourself. Was it harsh? No, it was honest. He's not responsible for Chris's business problems. Chris's. And he wasn't responsible for propping up a failing business or rescuing Chris and I from our financial problems. It was really painful for Chris to hear it. But he needed to, because it was the truth. And it was just a few weeks later that Chris hit rock bottom. The business hadn't paid him in more than 6 months. It was running on fumes. He and his business partner had been working nonstop for years trying to make this business successful. It was this conversation with his brother that helped him realize he just had to get out of this business because the business couldn't support two owners. Plus, Chris had developed a major problem with alcohol. He was drinking away the stress and engaging in other kinds of self-destructive behaviors. He was depressed. He was anxious. He knew he could no longer live like this. That was his rock bottom moment. Now, if his brother had loaned him the money, it would have just prolonged this devastating situation. When his brother said no, Chris had no choice but to rescue himself. That's why a rock-bottom moment changes your life for the better. Because when you finally hit it, you connect with something solid inside yourself, the resolve to change. The pain is critical. Remember what Dr. Waldinger said, let people learn from life. And I also want to point out that Chris's brother said no to the money, but that doesn't mean he wasn't supportive. He listened to Chris. He validated Chris's fears and his feelings. He felt a lot of compassion for him. And ultimately, by refusing to loan him money, he was saying, I believe in your ability to figure this out. And you know what? Chris did figure it out. The right answer wasn't propping up the restaurant. It wasn't running away from the situation or throwing money at it. The right answer was saying, I'm not doing this anymore. I quit. The first step to changing your life is taking responsibility for the fact that your life isn't working. That's why you need to let the people that you love face reality. Do not help them run from it. It's your job to love them and believe in their ability to do the work and support them from a safe distance, which is what Chris's brother did. Because just like there are a million ways to solve a problem, there's also a million ways to provide support. How to create the best possible environment for healing. One of my favorite ways to provide support is thinking about how can you create an environment to help someone get better? What exactly does that mean? Well, there's a lot of research about the role that your physical environment plays in your mental, spiritual, and physical health. It's everything from the space you live in, the clutter around you, the food in your fridge, the people you spend time with, and the plans in your calendar. And so if you're in a situation right now where you're trying to support somebody as they're struggling, or you yourself are struggling, ask yourself this question. How can I create an environment that makes change and getting better easier? And there's a million ways you can do this, but I want to start with an example from my life. When our first daughter, Sawyer, was born, I had a very complicated delivery and I lost a ton of blood. And by the time I was finally discharged and sent home, I was not only physically destroyed, I was mentally devastated. And I was diagnosed with severe postpartum depression. It was so scary, I couldn't be left alone with Sawyer for the first 4 months of her life. I couldn't breastfeed because of all the medication I was on. I was so depleted. I spent most of the days sleeping, sitting like a zombie, just zonked out on these prescription drugs. What I remember most is that no one asked me how they could help. They just showed up and created an environment for my healing without even asking. My cousin came over to clean one day. My parents drove across country and they stayed with us for weeks. A new friend, Joni, who was pregnant at the time, would come and just sit and keep me company. I mean, I still get so choked up thinking about this. They literally, my parents, they just stayed for weeks so Chris could go to work. And Joni would sit with me while I dozed off to sleep. And she'd do a load of laundry or make a simple lunch. And then my in-laws came for a week, and every day they had something planned. Without even asking, they would say, all right, come on. We're going to the Boston Flower Show. And they would load me and the baby into the car. And even though I was still a zombie and I was still deeply depressed and struggling, they created an environment where I got out of the house and I began to step back into life again. No one asked me, what help do you need? No one asked me, do you want me to do the laundry? No one asked me, do you want me to drop off dinner tonight? They just did it. And that's an important note about people who are struggling. Let them doesn't mean leave them alone. When you're struggling, you don't even know what you want or what you need. And some days, you don't even know what day it is. Have you ever noticed that when you ask a friend who's grieving or going through a breakup or just got out of the hospital how you can help, they almost always say, oh, it's okay, I'm fine. Nothing, I don't need anything. That's because when you're struggling, you don't want to burden anyone else because you already feel like a burden. Let me create the environment they need to get better. And here are some examples of things you can do. Show up at their doorstep. drop off dinner, help them clean up their apartment, fill their fridge with healthy food, walk into their bedroom and pull the shades open. I remember when my mother did that. Let's get some sunlight in here. Lift up the windows to let the air in, do their laundry, make a playlist of great songs, send them podcast episodes or an audiobook that will help give them hope. Send them care packages filled with thoughtful and nurturing things, or buy them a digital picture frame and load it up with photos so that their environment that they're in is a place that's constantly reminding them of happy memories and that there are people around them who love them. One of my favorite things to do, especially for a new mom and dad, comes from therapist Casey Davis. Drop off a tower of paper plates and cups so they don't have to do the dishes while they're caring for a newborn. I mean, it's so simple and so helpful. Isn't that a great idea? And while we're on the topic, call or text a friend and say, I'm coming over on Saturday and I'm taking the kids or the dog to the park to give you a break. If your roommate just got broken up with, take her to get manicures or go to a new exhibit at the museum. Text someone once a week and just say, I'm thinking about you. You are not going to go through this alone and you do not need to text me back. I just wanted you to know I'm always here. Or you could invite your friend who just got out of a treatment program to go do a yoga class with you every Wednesday morning, and better yet, pick them up on the way. You can create an environment for positive change by offering therapy, cooking healthy meals, or having conversations and focusing on open-ended questions. Can you see how these examples are very different from just throwing money at a situation or enabling or rescuing someone from their problems? These are all examples where you're making it easier to step back into life. These are all examples that communicate, I believe in your ability to face this. I believe in your ability to move through this and get better and stronger and happier again. Because you never know what someone else is going through. You get to choose what kind of friend, loved one, or family member you get to be. You know, in this book, we've talked a lot about showing up in a way that makes you proud of yourself. When you help someone else, do it without expectation. Do it because it makes you feel good to reach out to that friend that's in the hospital. Don't do it because you hope to get a long text back updating you on what's happening. Drop off dinner to somebody who just had a baby, not because you're expecting a thank you, but because it makes you feel good to know that you show up for the people you love when it matters. And remember that when someone is struggling, they're often so overwhelmed, they don't have the energy to keep you updated or to remember to thank you. Just trust that your kind gesture is making all the difference, whether you received a thank you note or an update or not. Because your job is to stand by their side and to hold the light high. Be a beacon of hope and just believe in their ability to get better. And through your actions, demonstrate that you do believe that. People avoid healing because they don't believe they can face the pain they're running from. So let them borrow their belief from you. Because when someone feels accepted, loved, and supported, it's easier for them to believe in their ability to step back into life too. So let's summarize how you can help someone who's struggling. In this section, you have learned how you are preventing other adults from facing their struggles. The Let Them Theory teaches you that helping other people doesn't mean solving their problems for them. It means giving them the space and the tools to do it themselves. And the problem right now is that rescuing people from their problems makes them drown in them. When you enable other people with your money, your words, your actions, you're not fostering their independence or their strength. You hinder their healing. You prolong their suffering, their debt, their breakdown, and in turn, you create your own. The truth is that people only heal when they're ready to do the work, and you're going to be ready for them to do the work way before they are. And while your intentions may be good, constantly stepping in to solve their issues is creating dependency and frustration, and it's hindering their ability to take responsibility for themselves. Remember, you can't want someone's healing more than they do. So what's the solution? Well, using the Let Them Theory, you must step back, and allow adults to face and feel the natural consequences of their actions and choices. Instead of rescuing, offer support with conditions. This approach helps somebody take responsibility for their own life, their own healing, and their growth, and it demonstrates your belief in their innate ability to get better and to do better. When you say, let them, you trust and empower others to handle their difficulties while understanding that facing hardship and pain, it's a necessary part of growth. When you say, let me, you focus on providing support without taking over and creating the environment and tools necessary for another person to get better for themselves. Believe in their ability to heal and create an environment where change is possible. Be the beacon of hope. I can't believe we're already to the last section of the audiobook, and this one's my favorite. And it's the right section to come after we've just talked about how you can be more loving and supportive and how you can use the let them theory with supporting other people in your life. But now let's put the attention back on you and talk all about the let them theory and choosing the love you deserve.